Whether you're gay, straight, or bi, one of the first assumptions we make about a relationship is that it begins with sexual attraction. Maybe that feels like butterflies to you, or flushed cheeks, or being tongue-tied and awkward. But what if that feeling is entirely foreign to you?
I first came across asexuality when I was in my teens, and at that point, I didn't think it had anything to do with me. I saw the word, and I saw the definition. You know, someone who is asexual does not experience sexual attraction. And I was kind of like, oh, that's cool. It takes all kinds of people to make a world. And then I just never thought about it again.
Science journalist Angela Chen.
My friend Jane ended up driving from Baltimore to see me. And we were at a Burmese restaurant. We were just hanging out for the day. And, you know, as we're waiting for our food, I say, Jane, I have a question for you. What does sexual attraction feel like? And Jane was a little bit surprised. She kind of stumbled on her words. Oh, it's hard to explain. But she gave me some examples like, I feel warm. I want to be near that person. At the point that this happened, we were both around 24 years old. Jane was a virgin and had never had sex, and I was not. I was already in the middle of my second relationship. And even though she had never had sex at that point, she would speak about lust and libido in a way that in some ways felt foreign to me. You know, it wasn't about behavior, it wasn't about what she was doing, it was about the attraction she was feeling. It wasn't like a light bulb moment, but it was a moment where I was like, okay, I did have sex with my partners and I did want it, but it was for emotional reasons and psychological reasons. It was never for sexual attraction reasons.
Desire without sex. Angela Chen explores the contradictions and the possibilities in her new book, Ace: What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and the Meaning of Sex. I love that story, and it fascinates me, partly because I don't think I've ever asked myself, well, what does sexual attraction feel like? I mean, how do you know you don't feel sexual attraction? You must feel something. I mean, why did you choose those two boyfriends?
And, you know, that's one of the things that's so complicated about identifying as asexual or ace is that you're spending all this time being like, oh, I don't experience this thing that other people experience. And then you have to explain to other people what is it that you don't experience that they are probably experiencing.
Which means you have to tell them what they're experiencing and then say, yeah, exactly. That thing, I've never felt that.
Exactly. And I think the way that I tend to explain it is that we are attracted to people for many reasons, right? You know, intellectually, emotionally, and aesthetically. One thing that aces do is that we separate sexual attraction from aesthetic attraction. And so there were so many factors that made me choose those partners. It's not like in the absence of sexual attraction, everyone looks the same to me. And that's one of the reasons why, actually, it was so hard for me to realize I was ace.
So what did it change for you to say to yourself, huh, I think I'm asexual, I think I identify as ace?
I think it explained some experiences that I'd already had in my life and made them legible. You know, my friends always used to make fun of me about saying, you can never tell when someone's flirting with you. But I think on a bigger level, it started to have me think so much about what I call compulsory sexuality, which is this attitude that's very present that every normal person experiences sexual attraction, and that if you don't experience it, then there's something wrong with you. And I think that that message really affects people in different ways. One person I interviewed actually grew up in a very religious environment. And so at first it was very easy for him to be part of purity culture. But then after he was married, and he realized that sexuality or having sex was not what everyone promised, it was actually very hard for him because everyone was saying, it's amazing, it's God's gift. And he was thinking, what is wrong with me that I cannot enjoy it? So even in spaces where purity culture is very strong, we can see compulsory sexuality. And that is an attitude that affects many people, regardless of whether you actually identify as asexual or not.
So what does it feel like to fall in love and to feel passion for somebody else if it's not sexual passion, if there's not sexual attraction?
I think it's, you know, a lot of love and attachment and caring. I think it's also aesthetic attraction. I would definitely say I'm aesthetically attracted to my partner. I think it's also infatuation or limerence. And even as I say that, these are all things that you can find in friendship, right? Mm-hmm. At one point, I was doing this thought experiment and thinking about my feelings toward my friend Jane, which are not romantic feelings, and my feelings toward my partner, which are romantic feelings. How are they really different? I think that when you have a romantic partner, the stakes are higher. And I think that there's a lot of other emotional baggage that comes with it. But at the core, I'm not entirely sure if it's really that different. I think that we are encouraged to experience these emotions very differently because there are all these rules and assumptions about the role of a platonic friend and the role of a romantic partner and what is appropriate to feel toward one and what is appropriate to feel toward the other. And so many scripts pressure us to elevate romantic love above other kinds of love.
And so then what is the cost for people? I mean, it only matters to open this up and to begin to try to name some of these differences if you feel like by not naming them, somehow people are suffering. So where is the pain?
I think the pain is when there are relationships or feelings that don't fit into one of those rules. I think that can create a lot of confusion and a sense that the relationship is not legible. For one example, two people who are of the same gender who are very close, oftentimes there's this kind of implication, this joke, like they're secretly gay for each other. Even the people themselves might be like, am I secretly sexually attracted to my friend? I don't even know. Or often people will have a friendship and they'll say, what is this? I think it's very uncomfortable for people. I think that creates confusion about what it means about you and possibly your sexual identity, what you should do regarding your current constellation of relationships. And I think that when you can try to stop thinking about things so much in the, is it romantic, is it platonic, and more in the sense of what do you actually want from this relationship, that gives us more self-clarity and more of an ability to design the types of relationships we actually want.
Yeah, there's so many different roles people can have in our lives. We have remarkably few words for them, you know, few categories. Are there new words, a new vocabulary for relationships that you can imagine?
Absolutely. One word that came out of the asexual community is the word queer platonic. And it was created in 2010. So fairly recently, as words go, by these writers who were frustrated with the way that romantic love was the center of everything. It was almost like a way to get out of the trap of language. If I say, this is my friend, you both have these implicit expectations and baggage about what a friend means and how much you're supposed to see your friend and how much is too much. And if you say, I have a romantic partner, you both, even if you don't want to, have these conscious ideas or unconscious ideas of what it means to be a partner. But if you say, this is my queer platonic partner, nobody knows what that means. There's no assumptions there.
It's like, we're just off the map.
Yeah, you're just off the map. And when you're off the map, then you can start to create them. You get to decide, here's what it means to be queer platonic partners. Here's what we are to each other, instead of having to kind of work against the expectations that are already there when you have terms like friends or romantic partner.
So what does all this mean for marriage then? We confer rights, you know, legal rights and privileges to romantic partners, but not for other types of relationships, not for friendships. Is that discrimination?
I think that there's a way in which it could be better. And I am happy to say that I am stealing this argument from a philosopher named Elizabeth Brake, who writes about this extensively. And people receive, as you said, a lot of rights for being married. And I think that the implication there is that there's an element of romance or sex elevates the importance of the relationship. The joke that people often like to make is that you can marry some random stranger and give them healthcare, but you can't marry your mother, even though you might love your mother more. You can't marry your sister. You know, there's so many embedded in marriage is the idea that marriage itself, the qualities of that kind of love are more important than the care that you may receive from other people in your life, relatives, chosen family. And I don't think that's true. There have been legal arguments made that the rights that people receive in marriage should be available for all people who mutually want to join a union, regardless of whether it's a romantic union, regardless of whether it's a sexual union. I'm sure there's many logistical holes there that I will leave to the legal scholars to figure out. But I think philosophically, that idea is very compelling. There's so many ways to receive mutual care and affection that are not just romantic relationships and marriage.
Angela Chen is the author of the book ACE, What Asexuality Reveals About Desire, Society, and the Meaning of Sex.